just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born.
You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Someday the mountain might get them, but the law never will.
Well, this man is, of course, known for his roles as Mr. Kent on the TV series Smallville and Bo Duke on that 80s TV classic, The Dukes of Hazzard. But the reality is that actor John Schneider he's done it all. I mean, seriously, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, Diagnosed as Murder, Touched by an Angel, Jagwalker, Texas Ranger, Murder, She Wrote, Relic Hunter, I mean, just to name a few. And then there's the whole country music career thing. It's Now or Never, I've Been Around Enough to Know, Country Girls, What's a Memory Like You Doing in a Love Like This. Now, seriously, I have some memories about that song right there, but I can't get into that right now. You're the Last Thing I Needed Tonight. And if my research is correct, I think he recorded 11 albums in total. John, is it 11 albums?
It's 11. My gosh, you've done your homework. This is phenomenal.
11 albums. That's pretty good, man.
Well, it's been a great ride, you know. It's been terrific. I was always a music fan, and I grew up in Mount Kisco, New York, just not too far south of you, and not nearly as south as people think.
No.
My dad played in a square dance band, so I grew up around music, and I just love it.
My dad was
a
caller.
What's a memory like you doing in a love like this?
Oh,
wow.
Don't even go there, okay? Please?
You went there. You started.
Just do not even go there.
Okay.
Hey, listen, how was your time in Lost Wages?
It was good, actually. It was good. I played a little golf. I played a little blackjack. I did okay.
Yeah.
You know, and actually, first time in my life, I think maybe I came away with, maybe $200 that I didn't go there with.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, that's good.
And you're back home in California, right?
Back in California for just a couple of days, and then I head down to Orlando, Florida to play, Amanda Bynes' father in a movie for Morgan Creek.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So, yeah, and I'm promoting Collier & Company, Hot Pursuit. Let me say that right. Hot Pursuit.
That's good.
Say that right. There we go. Yeah.
I want to get into Collier & Company in a moment, but right now I got to know something very, very important.
What?
Is it Daddy Donut Day today?
Yes, I just got back. How did you know that? My gosh, you're good. Are you just outside? Wait a minute. You're outside the door.
I am. That's me. Are you a strict parent like Jonathan Kent?
I am a pretty strict parent, but yeah, I think Jonathan Kent was modeled after what I am at home quite a bit. Love my kids fiercely, but I do expect I expect them to do what they have to do, you know, do their chores and not talk back to their mother and do their homework and all that sort of thing.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
So you have to prepare them for life, because life is not going to be, if you don't do your homework, it's one thing. If you raise children that will not do their homework, you can kind of fudge around there, but there's no job that I know of that will allow you not to do your job.
No. So you got to drop the hammer to get them ready, right?
Well, somebody is going to be strict with them, and I think it should be somebody that loves them.
Yeah. Out of Leah, Chasen, and Karis,
yeah,
which one is the most like you? Like, which one goes for the Captain Crunch right away?
My gosh, man. Well, they all like the Captain Crunch. But I think Karis is probably the most like me, because she's very, very strong-willed and very, very stubborn. And so, you know, what do they say? It serves you right. You got one just like you.
Oh, yeah. I got one of those, and it's fun, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. It's fun. But, you know, it's good to see. It's good to see that kind of strength. She's into volleyball. And she's 12 years old. She's 5'11 and a half. And she is talking about wanting to go to a volleyball college. She wants a volleyball scholarship. And, you know, as soon as your child utters the words, you know, this is what I want to do when I grow up, I want to play professional volleyball or whatever it is, you'll find that everything will change. Their grades will change, because now they've attached good grades to something they want really badly.
Sure, something that turns their crank.
Yeah, not just something where we're saying, you know, you got to get better grades because you do.
Yeah.
I said so.
Yeah.
You know, now she wants to go to Pepperdine University out here in California, which has a great volleyball team. She's got to really hit the books.
Yeah.
So it's great to see that change.
I have a son who's 17 and 6'5 and is right into the volleyball, has led a couple of teams into the district championships. And you know, finding the drive and the passion when they hit that 16, 17, 18 thing, it's all of a sudden like apathy reigns.
Yeah, I noticed that with my my 21-year-old. Well, she's 22 now. Wow.
You're old, dude.
I know. Isn't it interesting how that happens?
Yeah.
And I wonder, maybe we just forget, but I don't think so. I don't think we were like that. I'll be 47 on my next birthday. And I don't think that it was cool when I was a teenager to be uninterested in blasé, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. We didn't know the word whatever.
Yeah, that's
the way it exists now.
That's the only word that's banned in my house. If one of my kids ever says to me in my face, whatever, there will be a decapitation.
There you go. What do you mean, whatever?
Exactly. Exactly. Now, rumor has it you do a brilliant Christopher Walken.
Well, it's a wild thing. I talk with Chris quite often. It's a strange thing he does with his voice. Yeah, there you go. My Christopher Walken is so good that it's not any good because it sounds like him.
I know. That is classic stuff.
From Michael Rosenbaum, actually, here's a great combination. Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor on Smallville, and Jim Caviezel, who was Jesus in the Passion.
Yeah.
Both do great Christopher Walkens, but entirely different. Rosenbaum's is funny, and Jim's is very more dead on. So mine is kind of a hybrid of the both of them.
So
Lex Luthor and Jesus. Doing Christopher Walken. There you go.
Oh, that sounds like
that's cowbell.
It sounds like a South Park episode.
It does, doesn't it?
Oh my goodness.
I've been there. I've been on South Park. I have driven my car on South Park, Family Guy, and The Simpsons.
That is,
woo-hoo!
You know you've made it when those three things come together. That's the trilogy of recognition.
That's right. It used to be the TV Guide crossword puzzle. now it's you've been made fun of on those shows. Now you're somebody. It's been great. It's really been fantastic. So much fun.
Well, folks, we're on the phone, of course, with John Schneider. And John, I was actually talking to Gavin McLeod last week, and he told me to say hi to the boy from my hood, kind of thing.
That's right. That's right. We were born in the same hospital at slightly different times.
Yeah.
He's a great, what a great guy he is. Class act. He's a wonderful man.
He really is. We had some great feedback from our interview with him. But speaking of childhood memories, let's talk about Gut right off the bat here. Of course, this being
how do you know these things?
This being your nickname, right, when you were a kid?
Yes. My gosh, you're reminding me of things I forgot about.
Oh,
yes,
sorry.
I was called Gut when I was a kid. That was my loving friends called me Gut.
Isn't that special?
By the time I was 16, on my 16th birthday, I weighed 245 pounds.
Wow.
I'm 6'3", 245 pounds, and I've always had my trainer when I was doing Dukes of Hazzard and I was working out really, really heavily said, you know, last time I saw legs like that, they were hanging from a nest.
Oh, no.
So I didn't have any of that. I wasn't carrying any of that weight, and I still don't. When I put on a few around Thanksgiving and the holidays, I never get anything in my legs. It's always right around the middle. So my friends lovingly called me Gut, and it's left scars.
But you came.
I didn't lose it. I lost it, and I kept it off.
And you came out publicly. I got to ask you this: what was behind the decision to finally sort of publicly discuss this on Larry King, no less? This whole childhood battle with obesity.
Well, I had I have a very dear friend out here in Thousand Oaks, California, who's a chiropractor, who also had been kind of he was a short round guy. I was a tall round guy, and we started talking about that. He didn't know that about me, and he said, you know, I wrote this book. I wrote he's doing a program. His name is Doug Markham. This whole thing about childhood obesity, and said, I'm due to be on Larry King in 3 weeks. Would you go with me? And I said, well, sure. So, because I hadn't talked about it for a while just because it'd been so long. That's been a long time.
Sure.
But when Dukes was on, when I would answer fan mail, a lot of times I would get mail from people who said, I heard a rumor that you were heavy and I'd like to lose some weight. What do I do? You know, now some 25, 26, 28 years later, a couple times a year, I will run into a dad or a mom somewhere out on the road that says, you helped me lose 100 pounds.
Wow.
I've kept it off, and when I was 12, I wrote you a letter, and it feels so good because it's really, not only is it unhealthy, and not only are you likely to die if you maintain obesity past your childhood. But it's just not any fun.
No.
You know, it really isn't any fun to be a kid who's running. You have to do gym class. You have to run around the track or whatever it is that you have to do in physical education. I was the one with the inhaler. It's in all the movies, you know, in all the Sandlot movies, I was the fat kid with the inhaler. It's no fun to be that kid.
But even acting as a child, I mean, you were cast as the fat kid, right? A funny thing happened on the way to the Forum, Fiddler on the Roof.
I did all the Zero Mostel parts. and once I finished that, my brother had said to me once, we were at Six Flags Over Georgia, and my brother made a great comment. It was a nasty, terrible thing to say, and I'm glad he said it. And you should say this to somebody if they need to hear it. I wanted to be a movie star. And there I was, 15 years old, no, yeah, 16 years old at this point. My top weight, 245. And he said, well, you know, John, you're not going to be a movie star. Nobody's going to want somebody that looks like you in the movies or on television. I said, oh, come on, Bob, look around. Look, there's so many people are heavy. It's not that big of a deal. It doesn't make that much difference. And he said, nobody around here really is kidding themselves and thinks they're going to be in the movies and television.
Hmm.
And the next day, I stopped. I stopped eating all that stuff. I went away from the Captain Crunch. I was a big kid, so I was in, at that point I lived in Atlanta. You had to be 18 to drink beer in Atlanta, and people thought I was. So I was Captain Crunch, pizza and beer, open a box of something and eat it till it was gone. You know, that sort of a thing. I wasn't a binge eater. I just ate everything all the time. And I stopped. But I still went to Pizza Hut and I had a salad bar. I found a beer, I'm talking about this, 16 years old and having to find the right beer. I like beer. I'm like Homer Simpson. I found a beer called Gablinger's, which I don't think exists anymore, 0.2 carbohydrates per 12 ounces.
Wow.
So I was a motivated 16-year-old. 2 months, I lost the weight. I played Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof in ninth grade, and I played Sid Sorokin. Sorokin in the pajama game in 10th grade. So it was a remarkable change. People didn't even realize that it was me when I came back to school. It was like, whoa, where'd you go?
Well, you know, one of the stories that you've told, and I resonate with this story only in this way. One of my favorite pinball machines as a kid was that Evel Knievel pinball machine.
Evel Knievel pinball machine, yeah.
That was awesome. It turns out it's one of your favorite machines as well. Tell us a story about how Evel saved your life.
Well, I used to, the only job I had outside of entertainment was, I was a bouncer at a bar called, this was after I'd lost the weight, the Bavarian Alpine Inn. My gosh, I haven't thought about that in a long time. It's a college bar, was outside of Atlanta. And they had the Evel Knievel pinball machine in there, and I was playing it. I think this is the story you want, because it saved my life a lot. I'm the big guy. There was a little bouncer in there named Corky. Probably 5'6", but one of those, if there's somebody who thinks they're really tough and they're 5'6", chances are they are.
They are, yeah.
Don't mess with somebody. Don't mess with a mean 5'6" man.
Especially if they growl or drool.
Or their name is Corky, yeah, exactly. This guy just smiled. He loved it. He loved nothing better than to cause something. So I was busy playing a game and something was going on in the ladies' room, and he went in and took about three. I was very serious about my bouncer duties playing pinball. He went in the ladies' room and came out with three guys about my size and threw them out the front door. So I think probably Evel saved me through Corky in that regard, because I would have gone and said, hey, guys, what's going on? And they would have, you know, I'm the guy, if I walked off of a bus full of pastoral staff, the homeless guy would come to me and ask me for money.
Yep, I get it.
I'm that guy.
Well,
is the sucker tattoo on my forehead? That's what I want to know.
Well, speaking of money, I want you to pull us right into that $100 bill that got you into the gym.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my gosh! I'm fascinated here. This is great. The day after Six Flags Over Georgia, when my brother called me basically a tub of lard, you're never going to be anything. I stopped eating. We went bowling across, not far from where I lived in Atlanta with my mom, with our mom. And waiting for shoes, I guess, I went over to the Evel Knievel pinball machine that was over there because it was your favorite and my favorite.
Yes.
Started to play, dropped a quarter, bent over, and underneath the pinball machine was a bill all kind of wrapped up, folded up. And I picked it up, and I thought, wow, somebody lost a dollar. I'll find a change machine. and opened it up. It was a $100 bill. Went over to my brother and said, Bob, look, that's a $100 bill. I said, what am I going to do? He said, what do you mean, what are you going to do? You're going to go turn it in and say, excuse me, minimum wage earner, somebody lost a $100 bill. Would you please put it on the billboard, you know, put it up on the corkboard?
Yeah.
You idiot, keep it. My brother is, you know, nothing if not direct.
Yep.
Yeah, Bob, he's great. So it just so happened, I mean, this all if this was in a movie, it would be, people wouldn't believe it. That night, I was telling the story. My mother, we had some great friends in the apartment building where we lived, and a guy, the husband of my friends there, said, there's a brand new thing. It just opened up in Sandy Springs here called Nautilus. So they've got a special. It's a gym. I'd never belonged to a gym. People didn't belong to gyms in those days.
No, not as trendy as it is today.
No. You had a bulwarker that you bought out of a magazine, and it pulled all the chest hairs off your chest.
Oh, that thing killed me.
Oh, my gosh. Terrible. Terrible thing. So he said they have a deal. It's, you know, 3 years. You can join for 3 years for what number? What do you suppose? $100.
Sweet.
And I said, when I go after something, I go after it. So I said, that's it. I'm going to go tomorrow. I'm going to join the gym. And my mother said, oh, John, if you join the gym, you're not going to keep going. Nobody is going to keep going to a gym. You know, they just want your $100. I said, no, I'm going to do it. Here I am, 2:45. So joined the gym the next morning, worked out every day like a madman, stopped eating the pizza, stopped eating the Captain Crunch, had my Gablingers occasionally. And,
The rest is history.
I lost 50 pounds. Yeah, had that not happened, I would have, certainly Dukes of Hazzard wouldn't have happened because they weren't looking for, you know, at that point, 270-pound farmers. They were looking for who I was on the Dukes of Hazzard. So had that not happened, the Children's Miracle Network wouldn't have happened. If it weren't for the Evel Knievel machine, it's arguable that machine in that bowling alley in Sandy Springs, Georgia, saved thousands of lives because of the Children's Miracle Network.
Yeah.
So it's just amazing what happens, and you can, if you can trace it back, that was 3 days, Six Flags, you're at Double Art. Sunday, find $100. Monday, they have a sale, 3 years for $100 at a gym. Join it, change your life.
Yeah.
Boom. 3 days.
Amazing.
Yeah. Here's
the quote from John Schneider. The psychological part, knowing that someone is going to see me on TV and knowing that I don't want to be the, what happened to John Schneider? My gosh, look at him. That keeps me in line. You do have to have something to keep you in line, right? So my question in this
is vanity.
Does this turn you? Yeah, exactly. Well, that's my point. I mean, does this turn you into a workaholic? Because if you're not working, then no one really sees you. So does it really matter as much?
Well, I guess it doesn't. But I'm still an 8-year-old kid sitting in the movie theater in Mount Kisco, New York, wanting to be John Wayne.
Right.
You know, I'm still the popcorn eater looking up saying, that's where I belong. So I have not even begun to, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not remotely successful because I'm not there yet. I'm still on my way there. You know, if you're somebody who's reaching going for the gold, reaching for the, nothing will please you, nothing will make you not happy, but nothing will make you take a deep breath and say, yeah, I did it.
Right.
Until you've done that, and I have not gotten there yet. So once I do, am I going to gain weight again? I don't think so. I want to live this to play with my grandchildren. Truth be known, I want to live to play with my great-grandchildren.
Yeah.
And people who are grossly overweight don't. People also, conversely, people who are grossly underweight don't either. So,
sure.
I mean, there's a place to be. This is a bit of a diversion, but I've got to go to this area because my mother, 8 years ago, my mother was diagnosed with lung cancer. She smoked since she was 14 years old.
Mm.
So she smoked herself into that the doctor told her, if you know, if you want to go out and spend some time with your family in California, you should do it now. You know, read here because you won't have another opportunity, right? She wasn't supposed to make it. My mother was 50, was probably 50, maybe a little more than that, pounds overweight. She lost all that weight because when you go through chemotherapy and you go through radiation, stuff happens with you where you cannot eat.
Right.
So the only reason I bring that up is I'm 47. I lost the weight when I was 16 years old. Had my mother been an ideal weight for a 67-year-old, she would have died. So you got...
interesting point.
Yeah, she absolutely... the doctor said, you know, because if you weigh... My grandmother got cancer when she was 80-something. We have longevity on our on the side. But my grandmother weighed about 115 pounds.
Right.
You can't lose 50 pounds when you weigh 115 pounds. It killed her, absolutely.
Yeah.
So put that. There's so much information out there,
for
so
sure,
much stuff
sure.
out there. But know that that's an absolutely true story right out of my family. Had she not been a bit overweight, she would have. She's tall. She's 5'10". So she had not been overweight, she would have definitely passed away.
Folks, we're talking with actor John Schneider here. John, it seems like whenever you go through a season of transition, like the in-between time between stopping one gig and landing another.
Yeah.
That, at least in the early days, life got a little weird for you, right? Like after Dukes went off the air, it seemed that life sort of began to unravel a bit?
A little bit, and then country music came.
Yeah, which is synonymous, really, for most people. Life falling apart and then recording country music. It works.
There you go. Where's my dog? Right.
But during those times, did it seem like God was always up to something, to quote you?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what keeps me, going. I mean, I'm just as big, or if not a bigger screw up than anybody you know.
Yeah. Well.
But and including that fellow in the mirror. But I have always felt that he's up to something, and I'm part of it, and so are you. We're part of it. We're not just here to filter air. Okay, we've got something. He's got something. He's up to. It's not us. We are the hammer. You know, we are the tool. We are designed specifically for some purpose. Does that keep us from screwing up? No. Does it keep us motivated? If it has kept me motivated from day one, I haven't done it yet. I know I haven't done it yet. I'm not sure what it is, but I know that when I go out and do a movie that people enjoy themselves, and it changes their relationships when they leave the theater or when they turn the television show off. Changes something about them. Even if it just makes them more stubborn and pig-headed like me to go out there and do something to change something in the world. That we have to. We must. I have a line in Collier & Company. Sees somebody who has parked, they park motorcycles in a handicapped space. He says, that's not right. And my wife says, oh, some people are just ignorant. So he sees these people inside the restaurant, and he gets up, and she says, oh, please, you know, don't. And he says, and these are the truest words, I can't not.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Those are important words to me.
My wife has been embarrassed on more than one occasion for me approaching somebody who's parked in a handicap spot.
There you go.
Yeah.
Does it just burn you up?
Well, it does. There's a few too many things that burn me up. I just probably need to chill. John, when did the God stuff really start being more than just your grandma's faith?
Oh, my gosh, you're amazing. That would have to have been after country music. And let's see. When I was in a church with a buddy of mine playing music, for him, you know, saying, all right, I'll go to your church with you and play music. And I saw a little old fella being picked up off the floor. They prayed. They knelt down every day and prayed every Sunday. And this little old crippled gentleman had the strength to kneel down, but he didn't have the strength to get up. And somebody, a huge black man with braids and gold chains around his neck, helped him up, and I saw in them, now that you mentioned my grandma, I saw in them the faith my grandmother had exhibited to me early on. And I wasn't wondering whether it was real. It had never even crossed my mind, honestly. I wasn't searching or wondering. But I saw that this affection and appreciation and love for a common God, common to them, but God is by no means common.
Right.
Don't take it that way.
Yeah.
Changed my perspective. And I've always been one of those guys, I don't do something halfway. I go out and I do something and I do it and I do it and I do it and I will die doing it. And that's why people will follow me. But I'm also the kind of guy that if I'm going out there and you come to me with a piece of wisdom that is obviously a better way, a more correct way, something to do whatever it is, I'll change. Just like I decided I was going to lose that weight.
Yeah.
You know, I can be swayed with the truth instantly. And that's what happened that day. And then I thought, this is where the Children's Miracle Network came from. This is why I had the nerve to go out and audition for Dukes of Hazzard the way I did. This is why when there's something that I have to do, it's something I have to do, not something I necessarily even want to do. It's something I must do. I've always been that kind of a person. I had to lose that weight. I didn't think it was just a good idea. I knew that Saturday, he's right, I need to change this right now.
John, how did you go from a guy who was bored out of your skull with so much spare time as a kid to someone so driven?
I don't know. I wanted to be John Wayne.
Right.
You know, I wanted to be the kind of guy that when he said, come on, we're going to go take that hill, that I wouldn't have to run up to the top of it alone.
Right.
There'd be people that said, yes, we don't care if there's 1,000 of the enemy over there and there's only 100 of us. You know, I wanted to be the leader of the Spartans.
Okay.
And it's okay to be the leader of the Spartans and because you die for something worth dying for.
You know, you sound like, not to get too spiritual here on you, but you sound like you got a bit of the David-like qualities.
Well, I think we all do. I just think many of us, society, will try to scare that out of us.
Right.
We'll try to reason that out of us, because it's true. No one in their right mind would do anything that is going to cause them or their family to be successful. It's too scary. It's too hard. It makes no sense to have put, I'm sitting out in the backyard. I have a beautiful house. I've got a wonderful family. I have put everything I've ever had and a whole bunch of money that I don't have via the miracle of credit into this movie because I can't not. Insane. Nobody would do this.
This also reminds me not only of David, but it reminds me of a guy named Johnny Cash, who I believe...
I love John, oh my God.
I believe you spent some time with he and his wife, June Carter Cash.
I used to live with John and June, yes. I lived with them. I did a movie with Johnny and June called Stagecoach way back when for CBS. We hit it off so well, and I was planning the next tour. Still, I was doing country music. It was probably right around the Sound of the Tone time. And John said, you know, where do you base when you do your tour? You base in Nashville? And I said, yeah. I said, well, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to rent a place there and park my suitcase there. And he said, oh, don't bother. He said, you come and live with us. Stay with us.
Hmm.
And here's a wonderful, wonderful quote from Johnny Cash. I was standing at the front door, knocked on the front door. John opened the door. And he said, hello, John Snyder. He always called me John. He couldn't say Schneider. I don't know why. A lot of Southern people can't. John Snyder. He said, I want to tell you one thing. And I thought, uh-oh, here it comes. And he said, if I ever catch you treating this like it's not your house, you're no longer welcome in it.
Nice.
Man, that changed my life. And that, Johnny Cash is a man who walked with Jesus. The only thing that held him together, the only thing that kept him from killing you or killing me or killing himself was Jesus. And it was obvious. And he was a man. You know, Johnny Cash was a man.
You know, there was a music video. I think the last music video that he did was a cover of you know, one of these popular groups today. I don't know the name of the tune, but when I watched the video, it was basically the gospel from start to finish. It was about a struggling guy just battling through.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I have optioned now a book that he wrote, and I'm hoping to get it to get it made. Collier and Company works. There'll be some money to do it with. Called The Man in White, and it's the story of the conversion of the Apostle Paul. If you haven't read it, go to Amazon.com and grab it. It's a wonderful book. Johnny Cash wrote it during good times, bad times, and great times.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful book. It's the first person. Johnny writes as the Apostle Paul. It's wonderful.
Very cool. Very cool. John Schneider wrote, directed, and starred as J.R. Collier in this latest movie, Collier and Company.
Yeah.
And the first draft, I think you wrote in 82 when you were about 22. Is that right?
That's correct.
You are a stubborn son of a gun, man. I mean, 24 years. 24 years, no one wants to do this movie. And finally, you do it yourself.
On my tombstone, it will say tenacious.
hopefully you spell it right, because, you know, the epitaphs you want to get right.
It won't be me that's spelling it.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
You have to blame that.
Good point.
Else.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. When I wrote Collier and Company, I thought, this is going to be great. People are going to love this. And tried to get it done. Truth be known, I was not ready as J.R. Collier to be in this movie until now.
Why?
You know,
why?
Because I hadn't had any... I hadn't shot myself in the foot very many times when I was 22. I mean, I was on the Dukes of Hazzard, and, you know, everything was just amazing. I had not invited the world to bite me yet.
Got it.
And now the world has bitten me several times, and I'm sure will bite me several times more. But in the wonderful words of Rocky Balboa, it's not how hard you can hit, but how hard you can be hit and still get up. There you go.
John Schneider quoting Rocky Balboa, folks. It's a first right here.
Well, if you're a motivatable person, go see that movie. If you're not, it'll just aggravate you.
I still drink the stupid raw eggs.
Sure, absolutely. Who doesn't hum the... Absolutely.
You know, I get the feeling that that J.R. Collier, that Collier and Company, this movie, is sort of a resurrection of Bo Duke in some ways.
Well, it is. The straw that broke the camel's back that finally made me say, other than my wife saying, would you just shut up about movies and make your own? The straw that broke the camel's back really was the Dukes of Hazzard movie that came out last year was just not the Dukes of Hazzard.
Right.
Wasn't bad, wasn't evil, it wasn't from Satan, you know, it wasn't that. It just wasn't, I mean, Uncle Jesse was smoking pot and pinching a woman's butt.
Yeah, that,
I mean, come on.
That didn't work, man.
That did not, that so, is to quote my children, that so did not work. So when I go someplace and I see a dad who's now 45 and his son and who's 7, and they still have one thing in common, and it's the Dukes of Hazzard, I knew that this movie had to be done.
Yeah,
something had to be done that put out a fun, lighthearted action adventure family movie where the guy was the best driver in the world and the bad guys weren't all that bad. The people that were 70 and 7 could laugh at the same thing.
Hmm. Lay out the premise for us.
J.R. Collier was once the best guy on the NASCAR circuit. Great, great driver, wonderful guy. Married, has a 12-year-old daughter, and has gotten into a wreck, one too many wrecks, so his wife deems it childish, dangerous, and irresponsible.
Got it.
Keep doing it, I'm going to divorce you. Well, that's what I do. So, in an effort to try to comply, he becomes a car salesman of previously loved vehicles. And how he acquires them is by running, he doesn't use the word race, he runs his junky old car late at night against people, pink for pink, and wins the cars. But they're not any good, so it's not really racing. It's, you know, it's like if I went out and played golf with Tiger Woods, only one of us would be playing golf. So he gets a hold of a car that's got something in the trunk or the glove box that the bad guys need back bad enough that they kidnapped his family. So he's got to get them back. Very much like an episode of any number of episodes of Dukes of Hazzard, you know, minding your own business, drive down the road, the Bugs Bunny doll falls out of a tree full of diamonds and the chase is on.
Got it.
That's it.
I love it. I love it.
It's just fun. But people who are working, I've got to go do a final mix on it today. People, they say this is the most ambitious independent movie I've ever seen. There are 2,500 cuts in it. There are junky old cars. There are million-dollar cars. There are 10 or 12 million-dollar cars. There are trains. There are helicopters. There are motorcycles. This movie is huge.
There's also two oranges that play a very key role.
There's oranges. Yeah, there are oranges. There's an orange grove chase that is hysterical. And this movie, I did this movie as kind of a little home movie, started that way last year, as a little home movie. Okay, I'm going to start. You can't, here's great wisdom, but if you really think about this, it's true and it's not nearly as simple as it sounds. You can't finish unless you start. Okay?
Boy, you're good.
Yeah, I know. You got to start. So I started. People started calling about, we want to run the Dukes of Hazzard movie for charity, and we'd like to have you come here. And I said, well, I'd love to come there and help your charity, but believe me, you don't want to run the Dukes of Hazzard movie. And why are you calling me about that? I didn't have anything to do with that. So, but I am making this little thing over here, you know, maybe I could come show a DVD. Well, word got out about this Tyron Company thing, and it became obvious to me that I needed to finish it. I needed to get helicopters. I needed to get all these fancy cars. So I put this movie together, really shot it out of my truck. My wife plays my wife, and my daughters are in it. My son is in it. My friends are in it. My mom is in it. And raised about $30,000 the end of last year for different charities from Savannah, Georgia to Las Vegas.
Good for you.
I'd love to say that was my intention. That wasn't mine. It kind of happened. Another thing about you can't finish until you start. Once you do start, things start happening.
Yeah.
Just keep your eyes open. All of a sudden, there's opportunities. So now, this thing that was really a non-union industrial family home movie shot out of the back of a Ford Expedition has now turned into the single most expensive venture of my life. But I can't not do it. It opens March 2nd. In 25 theaters, that's all. 25 prints to get this portion of it done is costing me $150,000. This has cost almost $3 million.
Man,
this is either the stupidest thing I've ever done or the smartest thing I've ever done, and I would do it again tomorrow.
How do we get it up here, man? Seriously, because I don't think you've got a release up
here. No, I don't yet, but I am talking to there are three companies up there because of the border
issues
situation. I have to make a deal with the distributor up there. They make the prints. They run the film. I would love to have the movie up there because we shot Smallville. Yep. Up there. Last year I was in I guess it's been 2 years now. I did Felicity up in Toronto. I had a great time. I've been there a lot. That's where we shot Night of the Twisters. So I should find out this week if we're going to have distribution of Collier & Company Hot Pursuit in Canada. I believe that we will.
If our people want to put some pressure on and want to kind of, you know, sign the petition or whatever it is, what can we do to get it happening up here?
You could call the movie theaters, I believe, that's how we did it down here. I get calls every day now, movie theaters that want it. There's the biggest chain up in Canada is Famous Players, I believe.
Yes.
Call somebody from Famous Players. Email them. Say, hey, you know, we want John Schneider's Collier & Company up here. We want to see Hot Pursuit. And it'll make a change. I mean, they'll want it. They kind of want it anyway, but there's some business that has to be taken care of. But, you know, if there's a demand, I'll make a better deal and maybe I'll keep my house.
yeah, might be good. And then we could see some other projects from Stand On It Productions, like what do we got going? We got Everybody Says Goodbye, Seven Ways from Sunday, What's Your Hurry, and Dead Center. Are there any roles for Candace Cameron in any of those movies?
Of course.
Because I was talking to her last night,
and I
said, Candace, do you mind if I kind of give you a plug with John here, you know, because she wants to get back into things a little bit more these days. So
now, if I could hit a golf ball, which I can't, I think I could hit their house from where I am.
Oh, you live?
Their neighbors across the creek.
Across the creek.
Yep, across the creek.
Nice.
Yeah, there's roles for folks.
Okay.
Now, something that prefaces Collier & Company, and it'll do it, everyone. There's a kind of, I call it my Walt Disney speech.
Yeah.
I'm in my truck and I'm talking to the folks because I obviously can't be in every theater, and I'm telling them what they're about to see, a very truncated version of this what we're just talking about.
Yeah,
I'm going to put that. Something like that in front of every movie. Because Stand On It Productions is not always going to make movies that you should take your 7-year-old to.
Right.
You just not Seven Ways from Sunday? No.
No.
Don't. It's a Western like The Wild Bunch.
Nice.
It's a Western, by God. And you do not want to take your 7-year-old to that. But I'll tell you that in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be one of those guys. People are going to hate me. Either like me or you hate me. Because I'm going to get on the front of the thing and I'm going to say, look, it doesn't matter what the rating system said. If they said this is something that's okay for your kids to see, they're lying.
Good for you. I'm glad you said that.
Go out there and get your money back, get a babysitter, and then come back, Mom and Dad, and see it. If you like Westerns. If you really like Westerns, you're going to like this.
Good for you.
But there's a rule that says if you come out of the movie theater within 10 minutes of going in, they have to give you your money back.
Yeah, good for you. That's brilliant, man. You know, what is it? I'm trying to figure this out. Like, what is it with you and cars, right? The General. Like, you have one of the originals.
Yeah, I have the very last one. And that is my car. I changed it up so nobody would sue me. I drive an orange. They did have orange Chargers in 1969. It's orange. It has no flag and no numbers and no push bar. But my car in Collier & Company is called Traveler.
Okay.
Named after the legendary horse of the even more legendary General Robert E. Lee.
Got it.
Aha.
Okay, well, because I saw one of these generals when I was stalking the Judds down in Leaper's Fork, just outside of Nashville there. It was down at the General Store.
The Judds down at Leaper's Fork.
Yeah, there's a line there somewhere. The General Store in Leaper's Fork, they have a General sitting out front. Now, do you know anything about whether that's a real deal or just some kind of knockoff?
It's probably some kind of knockoff, but that's okay.
Okay.
I mean, we wrecked all the ones that were the real deal. So it's not like you can have it. See, if somebody has a General Lee, it means that they spent a lot of time with somebody that they loved, getting the color right, getting the wheels right.
Got it.
You could buy the Torino from Starsky
and Hutch. Oh, man.
Dealership. You could buy Kit. You could not buy the General Lee. You had to make the General Lee.
Don't even talk to me about the Grand Torino, man. That was a sweet deal. Sweet deal. Okay,
yeah,
listen.
I just kicked his butt.
And you're killing me here. You're killing me.
Car and Driver did a story. Which is faster? It was either the Batmobile, the General Lee, the Gran Torino, or the Gone in 60 Seconds. New 500 Mustang.
Right, and?
I beat it. And I wasn't there. I didn't drive it. So it wasn't, you know, the same guy drove all of them. The General Lee won hands down. I've got 725 horsepower in my car.
In your opinion, John Schneider, which had the bestest driving in it? Okay, Smokey and the Bandit, the 7-Ups, Bullet, Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, Vanishing Point, or the infamous Knight Rider?
Well, the last one doesn't count.
No, I know.
You know, it's odd you should say that. They're all the same drivers. Jerry Summers was the guy that ran under the back of in the 7-Ups. He's the one that ran that, what was it, a Fury?
Yeah.
Under the back of a semi. He did Dukes. He also worked on Smokey and the Bandit. And he was in Vanishing Point. I would have to say, you didn't say French Connection in there, did you?
No, I didn't. You want to throw that one in?
Yeah, because that one, or Bullet. Oh, my gosh. Smokey and the Bandit, because there's a shot in Smokey and the Bandit because of those honeycomb wheels. Boy, I'm a car nut, aren't I? Holy mackerel. Because of those gold honeycomb rims on that 77 black, triple black Trans Am,
yep,
455 Super Duty. Because of those, and the Goodyear tires, when he would jam on the brakes, all of those, the honeycombs and the Goodyear logo would just stop, bam, as the car slid down the road. And then he would do the 180. It was beautiful. So
you need help, man.
I like that one, yeah. The others were so violent.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the 7-Ups, that was violent. Bullet was violent. French Connection was violent. Smokey the Bandit was fun. Smokey the Bandit made me want to be a better driver. It didn't make me, you know, 7-Ups did not make me want to run into the back of a semi.
You know, I relate more to Smokey the Bandit these days than I ever have. There's one scene where Burt Reynolds gets out of bed and he spends about 10 minutes cracking everything in his body.
Oh yeah,
that's where I'm at right now. It is horrible.
Yep.
Horrible. All right, listen. Let's finish this off. You got to have a life, and I don't want to waste any more of your time. And it's been a blast talking to John Schneider. It really has.
This has been so much fun.
Hey, you've been asked this a million times, so let's go through this stuff real quick. What's with Jonathan Kent from Smallville taking the dirt nap?
Yeah, the underground condo.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, there are two schools of thought. One school of thought is that they that the father has to die because of the movie.
Right.
But a bunch of Superman aficionados have come up to me and said, well, you know, the father never died in the something. I don't know what. So obviously the makers of Smallville were adhering to the movie legend,
yeah,
and not whatever this other thing was. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe it had to be done so I could make Collier and Company. It had nothing to do with me. Nobody came up and said, John, you know, we're considering whether or not we should kill Jonathan Kent or not. What's your opinion?
You sort of found out while you're looking at cars with Ellie, right? You get the phone call?
I got a call, said, hey, we hate making calls like this. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But you're dying. And so I enjoy not going to commute to Vancouver twice a week anymore. I love Vancouver, but I enjoy not going there twice a week. For a time there, I was feeling like I was a better dad on television than I was at home, and I don't like that.
Oh, that's a weird thing.
Yeah, yeah. I miss it. It's a wonderful show, but if it had not moved, then I wouldn't have had the time. I would have had the inclination, but I wouldn't have had the time to make Collier and Company.
Yeah.
And truth be known, John Schneider, the 8-year-old, sitting there with the popcorn watching the movie, never, ever imagined he was going to be a highly paid member of the proletariat.
Okay.
It was never in my childhood dreams to make a whole lot of money working for somebody else.
Yeah.
Just never was. My whole thing has always been, I'm going to make, and I did, I made movies when I was a kid, my little Super 8.
You and your Super 8, yeah.
50 feet of, you know, take it to Caldor's, wait 2 weeks to get it back and cut it together with a razor blade and a light from Light Bright, you know. And so I was more involved in making movies when I was 16 years old and 17 years old than I have been since. And I didn't realize that until I started making Collier and Company. I came alive again.
Hmm.
And it's not, none of that was bad. And I mean, it's not sour grapes. I've had a wonderful, wonderful career. But there's a difference. I enjoy calling people up and saying, hey, we're going to go shoot such and such. Are you available? I enjoy hiring people. I enjoy sharing the passion of a project with people. I really enjoy that. The other is just a job.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. I'll be 47 in April, and I didn't realize that I had become comfortable working for other people, and that was not what I was made to do.
Hmm.
So there.
Good for you. Now, was it 104 episodes?
Smallville for me was I died in the 100th episode, and then I did two kind of after that.
All right. Were there
158 of Duke's?
Oh, really? 158 of Duke's?
156. Sorry.
Okay. Were there many times in Smallville where the script conflicted with you being a god guy?
Yeah, well, it conflicted with me being it just kind of matters. They didn't, Jonathan Kent was a god guy. They never brought up, but Jonathan, there wasn't a conflict there. There was one conflict with the, I'm supposed to be, okay, just a minute. Lunch is ready.
Oh.
One thing where I was supposed to be okay with Clark and Lana having slept together upstairs in the farm.
Oh, yeah. Please at least tell me
I
you were
said,
safe.
Wait a minute. I said, no, yeah, exactly. I said, what do you mean? No. I'm going to say that. I didn't raise him that way. I said, you want somebody to say that? Have her. And Annette and I were very much like Jonathan and Martha, because she'd hold my arm and say, John, it's okay, it's all right, you know, we'll make this, we'll make this. And it was great. Al and Miles have told me since that that's one of their favorite scenes in all of Jonathan Kentdom was that scene. The expression on my face and how Martha had to keep me from killing the boy that would be Superman.
I could so relate to this, man.
Oh, yeah. And the great thing about that show is you really got the... Tom Welling is so terrific. You really got the impression there's only one thing in the world that he was truly fearful of, and that was disappointing his parents.
Yeah.
That was great. Wonderful.
That's sweet. Which episode did you like the best, Talisman or Rogue?
Well, Talisman, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah, because then I got to direct. So I really enjoyed Talisman. My son, I caught my son talking to a buddy of his on the way to Daddy Donut Day this morning about the scene where I had Clark and the bad guy lock arms, and it's where Clark gets stabbed. It was really, really terrific. So I enjoyed the whole experience of that.
Well,
as an actor, I enjoyed Rogue most because I got to be very powerfully protective.
Yeah, well, and it worked quite well. Look, man, I mean, seriously, you have done some amazing things. God has certainly had his hand under your life. I love your passion, but I think some of your best work has actually been, I think about 25 years ago when you and Maria Osmond founded the Children's Miracle Network.
25 years. It's been remarkable. We've raised just a little bit over $3 billion with a B.
Wow.
Dollars. And we've had wonderful, wonderful partners up there in Canada. Walmart's been terrific. Dairy Queen was one of our very first folks up there. They raise money all throughout Canada. It's wonderful. So Children's Miracle Network seems to not only bring out the best in people, but it brings out the best people.
Yeah. And now, was Marie your ex-girlfriend at one time? Is that just tabloid trash?
That's tabloid trash. We went to the movies once. We went to the movies and a funeral.
Oh, the same day, I hope not.
The same weekend.
Same weekend.
Yeah, we saw On Golden Pond and went to Lee Strasberg's funeral.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we had just done something, People's Choice Awards, I think, together. So,
hey, listen, John Schneider, you have just been an absolute blast to chat with.
Thank you. You have, too. It's so nice to talk to somebody that knows more than I do about me.
That could be a little weird, too, as well, though. But
it's okay. It's good.
All right, buddy. Well, listen, enjoy your family, your time at home this Saturday. And we look forward to seeing what's going to happen with Collier & Company up here in Canada.
Okay. Call him. Call him and bring it in.
You got it, man. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. I really, really enjoyed this.
Thanks, John. Take care, mate.
Bye-bye, man.
Bye-bye. John Schneider. What a neat guy, huh? Good guy. Nice to know there's real people down there in Hollywood. A few of them, anyway. A break on the show, and when we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines for you folks. 905-338-1250. Stay with us. When we come back, it's your turn on the Drew Marshall Show. Going out with Paul Brandt. Kind of reminds me of John Schneider in a little way. Same kind of story. Same kind of country guy, you know what I'm saying? Have a listen to Paul Brandt. We'll be right back.
He made me who I am for all the world to see. That's what I love about him. That's why I talk about him. And friend, I'd be lost without him. He makes this world make sense to me. And he laid his life in just so he could be my friend. That's what I love about Jesus.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
Now that doesn't make me perfect or any better than you.